We're on.
I guess it's good because we have a few... It's not extremely raw. There's been a few days since everything. Maybe even weeks since things have happened.
Yeah. So there's a lot happening in the news.
Yeah.
Between terrorist attacks and domestic issues with the police and all this other stuff.
And I think mostly our podcasts have been fairly not locked into a time or even a time and place. It's been really general up to now. But I think at the same time, I feel like whether people listen to this now while things are still happening in the world or whether they listen to this sometime in the future, I just, maybe fortunately or maybe unfortunately, that there'll be some universality to it. Is that the word? Universality?
Universality. Timelessness. Yeah. No, I think because it's not so much a matter of how you respond to a particular issue. I think this podcast is partially how we orient ourselves in light of all of these things, not just now, but for all of our lives and for the life of the church.
Well, I think it's easy to be a Catholic when you're in Catholic Church.
Right.
I think it's very easy to, you know, obey the commandments when they're easy to be obeyed.
Yes, honor your mother and father. Like, yeah. Okay.
Like, you know, I'm not killing anyone right now, and it's easy for me to not kill someone.
Remember the Sabbath? All right.
Yeah. But I think it's very easy, simultaneously easy and hard, that once you leave the church and leave the parking lot, it's very easy to slip into your normal life, or conversely, very hard to maintain your Catholic identity, your Catholic self, or Catholic life outside of the hour a week.
Yeah, and I think it's especially relevant because in light of terrorist attacks or in light of people, you know, being videoed, being shot by the police when they're unarmed, or policemen themselves being shot by people, I think there's so much anger, and then with the anger, especially for a lot of Catholics, there comes this desire to want to do something, and what to do and how to respond is an open question, I think. So that's what we're talking about, huh?
Yeah, like how to live our lives as Catholics. I also think that there's just a whole lot of things, and of course, like many other podcasts, I think my thoughts are very unorganized and not fleshed out, but I think in times like that, if someone were to, you know, if I'm, let's say I'm emotionally reacting to something, whatever it is, and someone would say, like, well, what does the church say? I think my honest initial gut response would be that it's insufficient. There's no, like, answer. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't provide me with what I need right now. Like, that's cool and everything to love your neighbor and do this and do that, but it doesn't help me right now when something has happened and I feel that there's some injustice. It is often my initial gut reaction that the Bible doesn't provide me, the Bible or the priests or whoever doesn't provide me with enough substance to use right here and now, here, right now, today. Does that make sense? Like, you
right.
know, and as much as I love, let's say, Father, so, you know, because I don't want to even pretend I'm criticizing, let's say, like, Father Brian, let's say there's a Father Brian. As much as I love Father Brian, you know, if that's the father that's at my parish or at a church that I might visit or something, what does Father Brian know in his, you know, in what I perceive to be his little, you know, sort of bubble life? What is he going to say? What does he really have to say about, you know, someone getting shot or police trying to do this or terrorists? You know, like, what are, almost like, I think how some people look at things like the Constitution is like, well, it can't talk specifically about our circumstances today. So I'm going to sort of disregard it because it doesn't provide me with the answers. And say, I feel like that way a lot. I would just guess a lot of people feel that way with the church. And I myself, my initial gut response is like, yeah, that's fine, but I feel like the answer is not in there. In that book, like the good book, well, for what's happening today, I don't think the answer's in there.
Right. Well, I mean, I think that's part and parcel of what Catholic moral life is about. I think it's a mistake to think that moral living is prescripted or scripted and prescripted in a book. And I think that's precisely the tension that a lot of people have with Catholic morality specifically and with morality in general. People want to have very specific answers, but at the same time, they want to have the freedom to be able to do things. And quite frankly, you're not going to have both. I mean, you're going to have general principles, which then you have to use your own freedom and reason to figure out how to apply more specifically, or you're going to have everything scripted out, and then you're not going to have the freedom to decide and choose how to respond. And so I think you're right that the Catholic response to something like this would be like, okay, well, we need to remain hopeful. You know, we need to spread love and work for peace and work for justice. And we might say, okay, that is at least there's something to be said, but at the same time, it doesn't seem particularly specific in terms of what guidance can be provided, right? And again, I think that goes back to then the point of moral living, which is that, yeah, it is up to us. We have to figure it out, right? When it comes to moral living, we can't look to the church and say, all right, well, what do we do?
Yeah.
Just give up our, look to Father Brian to tell us exactly what to do. Yeah. That's not how...
Father Brian, what should we do?
Moral living. That's not how moral living should be. Yeah.
So I think another thing is, and honestly, I can't remember if we talked about this on a podcast or if I just asked you about this in a conversation or if it came up in a conversation. But, people have this idea that, like, being Catholic or being Christian is just being weak and docile, like meek sheep, just baying and waiting for the...
Shepherd to lead them.
The shepherd to like Balky to take us, down the hill. But then Balky leaves to go to America. America or bust. And we're just the sheep that's left. But it's not like that. And you're the one that actually told me. I never remember this at all. That, in the Bible, Jesus said, what did he say? That he didn't come to bring peace.
Yeah, but to bring the sword.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I really like that. No, but I think partially why I like it is obviously because it taps into some, it's cool, and then he's sort of a warrior in a way. But I think there's a message in that that, when you bring a sword, it's to act. I mean, to do something.
Yep.
I mean, I'm sure the tone wasn't, I didn't come to bring peace, but to bring a sword just for show or a sword... just in case.
Yeah.
It was a sword because the sword has to be used in however ways.
Well, a lot of theologians talk about the threefold mission of Christ. He's a priest that heals, that offers sacrifices. He's a prophet, so someone who shares the good news and teaches what the good news is. And he's a king. He's a king that rules over, protects the weak, and conquers evil. And the church then extends to say that Catholics inherit that threefold mission. And if that's the case, then certainly we can't be meek and simply stand by while these things happen and just allow life to take its place. We have to respond as priests, as prophets, and as kings. How will we respond in a way that heals the divide? How will we respond in a way that shares truth? And how will we respond in a way, in a very political way, that asserts power in the face of injustice? And I think those are the big questions.
Yeah, and those are, and of course, good questions that I think no matter what position you take or what, I hate to even phrase it this way, but what side you're on seem like valid, motivating questions and themes. But let's just say, just to make it as because I think I've been somewhat like vague or sort of neutral at this, you know, at this point. I'm not trying to necessarily incite a side or do anything.
Right.
Even me saying this is like reaffirming my neutrality. But, you know, so it seems to be that there's – not that it seems to be. There's obviously, you know, this phenomenon of, you know, who knows how long that it's happening and to what extent. But for sure, there's a phenomenon of police officers, I don't know how the best to say it, like just going crazy, going all out, sometimes to the death of, you know, people that they consider whatever, dangerous or something that they're looking for, mostly who are black. Right. Well, and as it's been pointed out, not just black, but I mean, at least in the popular media and the news, it's been people who are black, but it's also been brought to my and other people's attention recently that, you know, largely like Latinos experience a similar phenomenon that's really ignored by the media also. So it's not necessarily, you know, us talking about this today, I'm not trying to necessarily talk about broadly people of color or black people in general or Latino people in general. But, you know, so on one side, there's this experience of oppression by, you know, police officers for whatever reason, whether it's racism or power tripping or just being fearful or being for, I mean, probably seemingly infinite reasons are being mistreated and being, you know, just being victimized by the police. And then on the other side, there's the police that are, you know, obviously there's a wide, you know, I can't generalize everyone in any group, whether they're racial or by occupation, but, you know, who, on other side, I think people feel like the police are really trying to do a good job and maybe do a good job of protecting the public safety and looking out for, you know, looking out for the community as a whole and trying to do the things that they've been tasked to do. So in this one instance, it seems like the questions that you posed, you know, like how to live a moral life with these, you know, like they're valid on both sides. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, let's dig into this particular issue a little bit. I mean, again, we don't want to be too caught up with this issue, but I think it is worth digging into this issue particularly and then talk about, you know, how Catholics respond, can respond, want to respond, get frustrated with it, and then see how those possible responses can apply to many different, you know, possible issues in the world. Yeah, I think what's interesting is you're pointing out one of the things that a favorite topic that you and I like to talk about, which is how people tend to have a very binary, dichotomous approach to things. It's either Black Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter, yeah. Right? Well, and then rightly so.
Or people, Black Lives Matter, yeah. Or All Lives Matter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. People want to make it an either or type of thing, and I think America as a whole is trying to realize, no, you know, it's everything, everyone matters, you know. And then it's like, oh wait, so what are we arguing about again? But what, you know, what's very telling is, you know, is again, you see on Facebook all these people posting all kinds of different things, and so. I saw one set of statistics that looked at how overall violence against violence in general as a whole is going down, violent crime as a whole is going down, and that's attributed partially to better policing. That yes, it is true that African Americans are or Black Americans are more are disproportionately killed by police officers. But then on the other side, you know, that the same, you know, the black community also commits disproportionately higher amounts of violent crime, and all this other stuff. And it basically a set of statistics that was saying, this is why these things happen. This is why the police does this and it's not their fault. Something like that. And then I saw another set of statistics, that was talking about, the discrepancy, and it also looked at, say, all right, well, it might be true, just as an example, it might be true that Black Americans, Black males particularly, are disproportionately more likely to be carrying a gun when pulled over, which might account for why they get shot more. So that would be an interesting statistic. But what they then layered onto that was a statistic that said, now let's look at unarmed black men versus unarmed white men and see if they are also disproportionately more likely to get shot. And it is. They are three times more likely, disproportionately. So if it's, I think, black American men or something like, 15%, or blacks are 15% of the population, black Americans 15% of the population, black American men who are unarmed, something like, of all those who are unarmed men that are shot, 40% are black American. So there's this huge discrepancy there. And what I mean, what was just very clear with these two sets of statistics is people were cherry picking the statistics to fit their side. And both sets of statistics are true. I mean, it can be true that violent crime is being reduced. It can be true that African Americans are disproportionately contributing to violent crime. And it can also be true that African Americans are disproportionately targeted by police, and maybe even unfairly so. So both sets of statistics can be true, and both sets of perceived problems can be true, which means that you need to respond with both sets of problems in mind.
And so there's the thing, and I feel it even with myself right now, you know, because as you're talking, I'm like, yeah, I completely believe it. I'm not, you know, I haven't looked at the statistics, but I know how statistics work. It's easy to manipulate them, you know, to your advantage or to someone else's disadvantage. But, you know, and maybe this is my own bias, my own perfectly stereotypical bias. You know, if I'm in Baltimore City, if I'm walking like wherever on the west side or something, which I don't, because for whatever reasons I don't, you know, if I'm walking there and someone told me, let's say I'm in an area and it's 80 or 90% black, and someone told me, you know what, there's a higher percentage of people here who you may not know who might have a gun on them, I would believe it.
Yeah.
And then if I went to...
And if you stayed in the same neighborhood and someone said, there's a higher percentage of people who are harassed by the police for not doing anything, I'd believe that,
yeah,
too.
I would believe that, too. Yeah. Yeah. I don't look at the statistics.
Yeah.
And then if I went and, you know, if I went to Hunt Valley Town Center and it's 80 or 90% white, and someone was like, you know what, I'm going to tell you that almost no one here, or let's say someone said, there's no one here that has a concealed firearm, I would also believe it.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be like, no way.
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding. Like, I would just believe it.
Yeah.
And so is my awareness level, am I going to respond in, you know, if I'm on the west side differently? Is my guard going to be up? Am I going to be, like, more fearful or whatever it is? Like, yes, my state is going to be different. But here's where it is, like, in my own, even right now, I feel myself getting into this. Now I'm very interested in, like, oh, well, either justifying possibly myself or my responses or my reactions, or like, okay, so let's have, you know, like, blah, 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 you know, like, let's look at this. How do we? But I myself feel myself drifting from, so as a Catholic, how do I respond to this? Because I really do think as Catholics, and I can't speak about any other denominations, I can't speak about other religions, but I really do feel like as Catholics, we not only can, but we really should do something. Not just, I happen to be Catholic, and because of this thing in my life, I should do something. I really think that as Catholics, as the brand, as like the brand on our soul, we should do something.
Well, and I think there are two things to that. I think the first thing is that as Catholics, the default is on the side of those who are being oppressed. And that's the default.
And that's hard.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, and I'm going to say, I mean, I will completely own, I'm sure I have biases all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, isms like crazy racism, you know, homophobia, whatever. I'm sure I own it all.
Yeah.
But definitely, you know, in certain cases, it's easy to be like, oh, you know what, that guy was victimized. I just saw this video on Facebook or whatever, and this police officer came over and was like, he came up to this house. He's like, "Are you so and so?" No, he was like, what's your name? And they were looking for, I can't remember, someone named Michael or something. And this guy's like, Patrick. And they're like, you're not Michael? And he's like, no, I'm Patrick. And then they basically go on to, like, really, I can't even say, like, arrest him. I mean, they, like, tased him.
Yeah.
And really, like, gave him a rough time. And then they pull out his ID and it's like, Patrick. And they're just like, well, I asked him for his ID. And they didn't. Yeah. You know, so obviously there can be examples of one incident or another that are very clear.
Yeah.
And in those kinds of cases, for one or the other, sometimes it's like, oh, it may be really hard for me. And this case is different. But, you know, let's say another example was, whatever, someone was reaching for their wallet and they thought they were going to be reaching for a weapon. And so they shot or tased him. And or let's say they were just, you know, resisting because they were worried or whatever. Sometimes it's actually really hard to be like, yes, I know in general the black community is oppressed. But in this case, I don't think that he was. You know, and that it could be completely true or not.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that it was. And I think those times it's really hard to side with the oppressed.
Well, I think that it's not an automatic siding, right? I mean, it's you side with the oppressed with the aim of justice, and it's something President Obama was asked about it recently on one of his town hall things, and what he said wasn't so much that that police not be supported or that police not do that. He didn't even say that police shouldn't do that. He just said that when these things happen, that they should be investigated and held accountable. And I think that's particularly true because I think what catches people's attention are when something like this happens and then they look into the police officer and it turns out that there have been half a dozen complaints mm-hmm. of people saying this officer, you know, tased me because my name was Patrick before asking my ID.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a half a dozen incidents like that before he shoots an unarmed guy. You know, that's the kind of thing that, there's something wrong if there are people who are systemically having their biases shown. And then as a whole, systemically, people with these biases who are abusing those powers are not being held accountable. Then there's something structurally wrong. And as Catholics, you know, I think the call then is to speak up and say something about it. But that said, the commitment, again, is always to truth and to justice. And so I think part of it as Catholics, it also means being aware, you know, and saying, okay, well, I can easily be fooled by statistics, but is there someone that knows statistics that can explain this to me, you know, to help me inform it, right? So I might see a statistic and be like, oh, that's really interesting. And that counters the way that I thought about things. So now I'm faced with a couple of different options. I can discredit the statistic, or I can alter my worldview. And, you know, again, I think the Catholic position is to say our commitment is to the truth. And if there's sound data that goes against the narrative that's on Facebook or the narrative that the media is feeding or the narrative that our community is feeding, then we are obliged to alter that worldview to fit the truth and then to fight for it, whether that means then on your own Facebook page saying something that may or may not be the best way to do it. We can talk about that in a second. Or educating people around us, or, you know, working however you might be to heal those divides. But, you know, you're asking how to respond as a Catholic. I think the first thing that I mentioned was this commitment to justice, particularly for the oppressed. But I think the other characteristic feature of Catholic morality and Catholic social thinking and Catholic interaction with the world is that Christian morality is radically person-centered rather than idea-centered. Mm-hmm. And so there's a sense in which Catholics really need to be out with people, whether that's with cops, you know, or with people who feel that they're being abused by the system, or in prisons mm-hmm. with people who feel they've been abused by the system. And, you know, that's the harder call, I think, is...
Well, for sure, the compassion piece, I think, is hard. It's easy to hear the stories of Jesus, you know, when the woman was going to be stoned, and he, like, whatever, spits in the mud and, like, draws in it with his finger. Which is always like, oh, it's such a mystery. Why did they include that in the guy? And why did the writers all include that particular detail? It must... I'm sure there's a good reason that I don't know, but as a lay person who half listens in mass, I'm like, huh, that's a weird detail that they always talk about. He spit in the dirt and like made mud and was like playing with it and then said, oh, well, whoever is without sin should cast the first stones. And so it's easy for me to listen to that and be like, oh, you know, so what a nice guy. So compassionate without judging, you know, so compassionate. Without putting the other people on blast or making them feel sucky. He was just like, well, but whoever's the one that doesn't have the sin. But when it really, you know, like in our lives now, it's difficult to be compassionate sometimes. Like it's hard. Like, because let's just say, and I'm sure, you know, people are going to either agree or disagree. But, you know, even before the stuff that's happening the past few months, you know, if someone, let's say... you know, whoever, someone that's trying to be arrested and they're resisting arrest and they get tased and they have a heart attack. And then, you know, or that they're resisting arrest and then the police use excessive force and kill someone. Or they're trying to run away and the police give them a rough ride or allegedly give them a rough ride and, you know, things happen. I think it can be really hard to be compassionate because it's, I don't know if it's very white or very American or just very defensive to be like, oh, well, if they just didn't do that, it wouldn't have happened. You know what I mean? Like, well, if they would have just answered politely or put their hands up or did what they were told, it wouldn't have happened. You know what I mean? It's super easy for us to be like, I mean, it happens in all other aspects too. Like, well, if she hadn't acted like that, if she hadn't worn those clothes, maybe this wouldn't have happened. Like, it's so easy to, like, blame the victim or, you know, what was that book that Mr. Kennedy, like, the deserving poor? Like, oh, when I was, you know, when I, in the 90s, when I took religion with Mr. Kennedy, he, in his class, there was a book called, like, The Deserving Poor or something. And the whole theme of the book was, like, how... And it's like a social psychology phenomenon also. Like, we often blame the victim. We, like, attribute, like, the aspect of their oppression to something that they did. Like, if all those people, if they just got jobs, they wouldn't be homeless.
Right.
You know, like, we sort of make them deserve their conditions. And in a similar way, sometimes it's very easy to be like, well, if they had just listened to the directions that they were given, the instructions, if they had just done what they were told... If they had just shown their ID when they were supposed to give it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's super easy, at least for me, and I'm not trying to speak for anyone else at all. It's super easy for me to be like, oh, see? That's what happens. Like with Matthew, like, oh, that's what happens. You know, if you're running and I told you not to do that and then you fall and scrape your knee, guess what? That's what happens.
Yep.
You should have listened.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's hard to be compassionate in those times to be like, I know I told you. And this is what happened. But you know what? I need to be compassionate right now and be like, are you okay? Blah, blah, blah. And even if everything that my, whatever, perceptions and generalities of in my head are true, I think it can be compassionate to be, you know, it's hard, difficult to be compassionate. Like, well, you know what?
Well, like, I think what's difficult is because, and you mentioned, you know, the adulteress as I think as a fitting example, because by law she did deserve the stoning, and there's no one that denied that.
Yeah,
and not even Jesus. He also doesn't deny it. So the difficulty is that you're right. You can look at these videos, and they're what's radical about the Catholic response isn't just to say, "Oh, he's being oppressed. Let's stand up for him because he's being oppressed." The radical thing is, let's stand up for that person. Even if they've done something wrong.
And that's really, I mean, honestly, that's a hard thing for me to do. It's very easy for me to want to stand up for William. Very easy for, you know, like, you know, whatever. You see those images of, like, those little kids in Africa. They're, like, starving and you want to stand up for them. I don't know why I always think about it. Well, I don't always think about it. It's going to make me sound like, make it more than it is. But, like... There was that one time years ago when I was on these, like, online forums And I wasn't even trying to stand up for Judas, but I was just trying to say, like, in I don't even remember how it happened, but I think I was trying to make the case that, like, okay, so Judas did this. This wasn't even a, don't get me wrong, don't paint me as, like, this Christian. I get on forums and, like, you know, I don't even know why I'm self-conscious about this, but, like, this was like a knife for, like, a knife or gear forum or something, but somehow it came up in religion. And I tried to make a point that, like, okay, well, let's just remember that Judas, despite being, like, the ultimate betrayer, you know, was still a person, and we should have some compassion for him. And people really got upset at me for saying that. People, like, took it personally as if I had said, you know, something about them themselves. It was, yeah, like, started this whole weird thing, but it's hard as Christians to be compassionate for, like, the people that we feel deserve it. You know what I mean? Like, to be compassionate to Lucifer, or to be compassionate for Judas, or to be compassionate, like, people, I think, could be compassionate for, like, let's say, Osama bin Laden's family. Like, oh man, that poor family. Yeah. Osama bin Laden, he was a demon, blah, blah, blah. But, like, to be compassionate to Osama bin Laden, that's... I remember I went to... I don't know what made me do it. I think I wasn't trying to instigate anything, but when I was in nursing school, we went to a Holocaust museum in L.A., and there was a survivor of the Holocaust that was speaking to us. And it was awesome, and it was very moving, and he talked about all his struggles. And at one point at the end, he asked if there were any questions. And I asked him, like, do you ever... Because he was talking about his whole struggle, like, with his faith and, you know, this stuff. And I asked him, like, have you forgiven them? Like, have you forgiven the Nazis? And he was like, no. Like, I feel like if he had a knife, he might have stuck it in my eye. Like, he was very composed and professional. And I'm not sure if he was offended, but he was very mad at that.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, have you forgiven them? He was like, no, they are demons. They deserve no compassion. And I think as a man, as an American man, as someone that feels like there's some warriorship inside of me, I completely resonate with that.
Yeah.
But I feel like Jesus would want me to at least consider, like, could there be some compassion? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's really hard.
Right, right.
Like,
right.
In the times when it's not black and white, when it seems just black.
Right.
Or this, you know, it seems bad or evil or whatever, yeah. You know, like, it yeah. seems like, oh, well. And that's, I think, where it's the hard thing. And that's what, I think, influences the times that are gray.
Yeah, yeah. Sure, yeah. But I think, what becomes then even a step more difficult is to say that it still, that again, it has to be person-centered, right? In other words, what you're saying is that it's hard enough to just in our minds to say this person deserves compassion, right? And yet the call is to go one step further and to visit someone in prison, yeah, and to try to understand, you know, and to be physically present with people. And that is just incredibly difficult. I mean, it's not complicated. You probably could call your local prison and just be like, hey, do you have a prison ministry? I'd like to come on the weekend. Yeah. It probably wouldn't be extraordinarily complicated, but, like, you know, it's very easy for people to make casseroles and send them down to the soup kitchen, yeah, because, again, it's like, oh, you know.
Or it's easy for us to, you know, be, you know, at
someone who,
and,
yeah, someone,
you know, serve families with children, yeah, and, like.
It's hard on their luck. It's, yeah, not their fault. Let's, yeah, help them out.
We don't know the story. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, we just are like, oh, man, it's really unfortunate. You know, these are the circumstances. If there's something we can do for them, we should do it. And I'm not, like, doubting that. I don't question that.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's a lot easier than
visit the imprisoned.
Yeah.
And it's not like pray. He didn't say pray for the imprisoned. He didn't say, like, donate to those who are imprisoned, or, like, make sure that those who are imprisoned really deserve to be there. It was visit the imprisoned.
Yeah. Do your due diligence.
Yeah.
Yeah, make sure that the laws were actually broken.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, so that's where I stand with that. And you know, so there, it's this complex call to try to figure out what is the truth, speak on behalf of the truth, speak on behalf of justice, then go one step beyond justice and be compassionate, and then go one step beyond compassion and be physically present. And that's, you know, you think people listening to this be like, that's an impossible task. But it was something that Father Mike, I think it was Father Mike said. I think it was from Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast. But you know, I think they were talking about marriage and like the impossibility of marriage. They're like, it's such like a perfect standard. It's like high, such a high standard. Like why does, you know, like God can't expect us to live up to this high standard. And he was like, well, why not? You know, God's love is perfect. Why would he demand anything less than perfection, moral perfection?
I remember that too, and I don't know if it was from Father Mike's or like, I don't listen to Catholic Stuff You Should Know. I don't listen to too much, but it was there. I do remember them, someone saying that.
Yeah. And that,
like the call should be, the ambition should be high. Like the goal should be lofty. Yeah.
It should be like, okay, I posted hashtag all, you know, hashtag Black Lives Matter, hashtag Blue Lives Matter on my Facebook. I've done my duty, you know. I know that's the Catholic response is one of ongoing conversion and ongoing growth.
It does seem very difficult. And someone, I don't remember who, was talking about, like, for instance, with marriage, you know, it's one of the, I think it was, maybe it was Father Tom at Mercy, like it's, or Father Paul, like it's one of the hardest things to really forgive someone who has hurt you. And obviously it made me think of, you know, Jen and how she's forgiven, I hope, or at least in the process. I mean, it doesn't have to be like a, again, like a binary thing, but like, but it is super hard, and it seems like at times like it would be impossible. You know, like for sure, I remember being on the phone with you the night of 9/11,
yeah,
talking about what had happened. And I don't remember if I said it, I don't know, but I know part of my feeling was, all right, sign me up.
Yeah.
I want to drop some bombs. I want to kill some terrorists.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's definitely, you know, that's a hard thing. It's very hard to be when you feel like it's offended you personally.
And that's, I mean,
my family.
Yeah, again, that's the other thing. I mean, because we've been talking about the issues domestically, but the same set of principles applies to terrorism. You know, how do we look at, you know, these issues? Of terrorism, and say, okay, we want to fight for justice. We want to fight for the oppressed. The oppressed might be people who are suffering under ISIS. I think they definitely are people who are oppressed, you know. And yet at the same time, maybe not ISIS itself, but many of the fighters and terrorists call themselves freedom fighters. They see themselves as fighting on behalf of their oppressed peoples, oppressed at the hands of other, you know, more powerful governments, including our own. That's how they see it. And I think the Catholic response has to say, is there truth to that? And we are children of God before we are sons of America. And I think that's a difficult thing to do too, to say, all right, we want to protect our Americans. We want to protect and bring justice to anyone who would attack innocent Americans, but we then also have to say, is America responsible for the innocent deaths of other people? Are we oppressing other people?
Yeah.
And if we are, then we have to speak up on behalf of that.
And I think that's where it's hard to, like, it's easy in church to be like, yes, I love God above all else with my heart and soul, but then to place it in a priority, not even in a linear one, but maybe even just on like a on the same playing field as like our nationality or our political ideology or something else like that. And then it was also Father Mike, because I listened to all of his podcasts probably since 2012.
Yeah.
But, you know, he told the story, and I was just looking it up actually, of that Saint Maria Goretti. Mm. Such a moving story.
I like that. I like his podcast on that one.
I mean, he also is able to tell these stories in a way that's much more alive, you know, but, you know, it's a story about how she was 9 years old and was raped and killed, and, you know,
on her deathbed.
Yeah, on her deathbed, she was like, you know, God doesn't want you to do this, please don't. And then, you know, she died. And then, you know, the guy that raped and killed her, after 20 some years, you know, goes to her house and was so scared and asked her mom for forgiveness, you know, because he was just hoping that she would maybe forgive him. And then when he showed up, she was like, what took you so long? We've been waiting for you. We forgive you. That's so moving. I think when I was like listening to it, I was probably running. I was like, probably, I don't know if I was like sobbing. I'm pretty sure it like brought me to tears. Like that level of compassion, man, that's the same kind of thing. When I hear that or read about that, I'm like, I'm not sure. I have all the admiration for that. I myself am not sure if I could do that.
Yet.
Yeah. What also reminds me, and this happened so long before, not even that long, but like happened before anything with William happened, but it always sticks with me. It's probably the main thing that sticks with me from Father Rich Bazzelli. I remember we were like reading about like Jonah and the whale. No, it wasn't Jonah. It was Job. Job just had a really tough time. Like, God really ran him through and made him, like, and go through some tough poop.
Yep.
And I remember saying, like, I just don't think... I don't think I could have that faith. And I actually don't think it was Father Rich. He echoed it. He like, formed it. But someone first was like, well... you'd have it if you needed it. And then Father Rich was like, yeah. When you need it, you'll have it. And that, the faith to even believe in that, I was just like, okay, thanks, guys. I still don't think that I will.
Yeah.
And I still frequently think that I don't. But
you might not. I mean, yeah. But I think all these things, faith, compassion, I mean, there's a larger issue here, both with in terms of, not a larger issue, but a related issue here, whether we're talking about racism in America, abuse of power in America, or terrorism. The other side of it is being hopeful. You know, how can you remain hopeful when you look at all the stuff, you look at all these conflicts, we try to talk these things through, we think we're making progress, and then these things keep happening. How can you still be hopeful? How could you possibly be hopeful and faithful and loving and compassionate in light of all of these things? And it goes back to seeing these things from the biggest picture, right? And the big... from the eyes of God, there are far worse things that have happened in humanity, possibly far worse things that will happen in humanity, and yet there's this greater power, this incredible love that always wins, that always comes out in the end, and so, you know, how do you keep sight of that in the light of very visceral reactions to things that are happening in the here and now? And I think part of it is that whether we're talking about faith or hope or compassion, part of the issue is that we start with where we are and we try to build it up. You know, like you could be training for like a 5K and then look at a marathon and be like, oh man, I could never do that. And you'd be right. Like if you've never run a marathon, if you never even run a 5K, you could look at a marathoner and be like, oh man, I could never do that. And that would be true until you started training.
But right?
That's the call of Catholics also, is that our daily, our weekly mass service and our daily prayer is a way to strengthen our ability to be compassionate, strengthen our ability to be hopeful and faithful.
But I mean, and I'm not trying to convince you or anything, but like that, it's so hard. Like, you know, we just watched the second Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian or whatever, you know, and in the first Chronicles of Narnia, it's very clear, like the parallels to Jesus' passion and all these things. They're very clear in the movie. And in the second one, some of the themes are also very clear, but not quite as clear. But part of it, I mean, part of the theme of the movie is, you know, sort of either rhetorically, or I don't remember if they're like asking Aslan or if they're like rhetorically asking, they're like, why can't you just come back again and save us like you did last time? You know, and whether it's that or whether it's, you know, seeing the stuff in the world and be like, is there God? Like, I believe, but can't can't there be some sort of... God doesn't even have to solve all of our problems. Can't there be some sort of reprieve? Or whether it's in the sparrow, like, where are you? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I believe this. I do all these things. And, like,
this where are happens. You? Yeah.
This is what I get. You know, like, this is what we get. And it's just so hard. I mean, I know that's why it's called faith. I know
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But in my heart, it still feels like... It feels like he's not showing up.
Hmm. Or, and this was the other part in the sparrow, if he is showing up, then he's doesn't seem very nice.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, right.
And I think that's really what it is. Like, we have this idea that, like, God is, like, the white guy with the brown beard,
sitting on the rock, eyes.
You know, and there's, like, the sheep, and he's petting the sheep and all the children around him. But what if he's not like that?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get into this too much into, like, the prophecy and stuff like that, but, like, you know, it's a very nice idea to have, like, the benign good king as God.
Well, one of the things, and again, this gets a little bit off topic, but I think it's still relatable, is this kind of idea that if God is infinite and all-powerful, then any notion that we might have that can try to capture him, even the notion that God is love, is still going to be a limited notion.
That's true.
Right. Any notion of God as justice will still be our limited notion of justice. Like, and this is actually, you brought up Job. This is Job's point. He's like, this isn't fair. And God doesn't say to him, you're right, it's not fair, I should be fair. He says, were you there when I created the stars in the sky? Were you there when I created human beings? Do you know what it's like? And he basically just shows off. He's like, I am the all-powerful God. And then Job's like, oh, I'm sorry. He doesn't. I think it's a beautiful ending to that story, because it ends the way that we encounter God, which is we bow down in the awesome power of God without understanding how and why he decides what he decides to do. And I think that in a way is really what makes it faith and what makes it humility.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah.
That's very moving, actually. Like, I feel like if it wasn't so hot up here, I would have gotten goosebumps when you said that. It's actually really good the way you said it. I'm going to try to read that.
Yeah.
Reminds, like, when Moses was like, who am I to, you know, what according to the Prince of Egypt?
Yeah.
When he was like, they're never going to listen to me. And then Jesus, you know, God was like, I'm not going to repeat it because I don't remember all the words, but... At least in The Prince of Egypt, it was an awesome scene when he was like, what did he say? He was like, did not I make...
Yeah, right.
Something, I don't know.
Yeah, he said, I am the God of your forefathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Didn't I not, you know, make a promise to them? And,
yeah. He's like, did I not make the mouths on man?
Yeah.
He's like, man, that's very scary and awesome at the same time.
Yeah.
We should have ended on your thing. That was much better. I really butchered the Prince of Egypt. For the site, it's not going to be on the podcast, but for the site, I'm going to... Actually, you know what? I'm going to search for it right now, and I'm going to play it, and then I'm going to also put it on the page. It was so good.
Yeah.
To find it.
Why don't we put it on the site?
Okay, fine. We'll just put it on the site.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Live morally.
Amen.